Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubal. Today, I have a very special guest, Tao Wong. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Daniel?
Oh, excellent. So sorry, I was about to cough there right when I said it. I really appreciate coming on today. Like I said before we got recording, it was so serendipitous because I had you on my list right off the bat for season four. I had picked up book one for A Thousand Li, and I had seen you kind of all over my social media kind of at one time, and I was like, this sounds so cool. And then when I started following you on like Facebook and on Amazon, I saw a bunch of your other books that just looked awesome. So I had grabbed a bunch. So I have you a couple of times right off the bat for my reading list for 2025. So I was so excited when Starlet approached me and like, you ought to interview these three guys, and you were on their list. I'm like, of course I do. I said, that was funny. I told them, I was like, I was gonna try and email you guys anyway. So this worked out so well. So I'm so happy to have you on today and get to talk to you about your writing and your experience and just help us learn more about your books. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. So we'll get right there with that first question. We'll start in. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
It's an interesting question. It's mostly on and off, for the last 7 years, since about 2017 or so, when I started publishing, it's been pretty consistent. I've been writing like crazy. But before that, as I think you get this answer with most writers, it's like, oh yeah, I used to dabble when I'm writing as a kid and whatnot. And I did that when I was really young, and then I wrote a bunch of shorts when I was early on. I wrote a couple of really bad novels when I was, in my teens and early
I know that
20s.
feeling.
Oh, stuff that no one will ever see. Partly because I've lost a lot of it. But then I had a, I started and stopped, and I wrote some shorts and whatnot, but I didn't really get back into writing until like 2017. And that was just mostly for fun. And I started writing on Royal Road, posted a bunch of my work for free, just because I was having fun writing again. And one thing led to another, and I started posting it on Amazon and making a little bit of money at it. So I went, you know what, I'll keep doing it. And I got really fortunate that a lot of readers found me without very little with very little marketing on my part, I had to admit. I was just super lucky.
It's so funny because like I said, like you popped up on my social media, but like I had you on a couple lists like right off the bat. So just so you know, like I mean, I've had people literally like the last two seasons, like I was really going for people the last two seasons that like approached me. Like I really try and help people. I had a lot of people that was like their first book, second book, like that kind of thing, or a project. I had some people for movies and stuff, some Kickstarter stuff. So I had your name for a while. I'm like, I gotta see who this person is and see what's going on, so it's so funny. So I do say a little while ago, but in all honesty, I'm a new dad still. So it was probably a year and a half ago I bought, a few books and stuff. But it was just recently, I think about probably like last spring, I just saw you everywhere, which was really cool for me. And everybody was talking about, one of your books and, recommending them to me. I'm like, I am trying, guys. I was like, it was like so hard for me just to read, and I was really struggling with the Audible. I like to read, if that makes sense. So I met myself halfway, and I decided, you know what? I'm a dad. I was trying to read something. So I start now I do like Audible if people have it, slash, Kindle or paperback. And that's helped me to get, to get back in the game. So right around like 6 months ago was when I started to do that. And then I started to pump, back through and reading. And my friend was like, you gotta read one of these books. And I'm like, I will get there. And then I had a bunch of people give me reviews for review copies and stuff. I made promises that I shouldn't have, so I'm looking at past me, kind of shaking my head. But it was so funny with how many of my friends, in the indie community, recommended you. So I just wanted you to know that, like, they love your books. Like I can, name like 10 people right off the bat, who, I know they probably won't want me to, here, but they'll be embarrassed. But they were like, you need to read these books. So that's where I have you, in my 2025 list, like right off the bat. So I think it's so cool to just, hear about that type of experience for you. In terms of Royal Road, I'm just curious because I'm sure all of a sudden all of my viewers are like, you're just, interviewing people that were on Royal Road, and it just keeps happening, so that's nothing that I'm doing. But it's funny with how many times it's popped up this season in particular. So I was just curious, do you mind, just letting our audience know just a little bit about what Royal Road is and, kind of how you got on there and just kind of how it works a little bit?
Okay, so I'm happy to talk about what Royal Road is. It's basically a free fiction website that you can go on and write for yourself or for other people and post your work there for free. There's no charges or anything in there. And so a lot of writers have gone on and posted their work there. It started out as, I believe, a fan website for the translation for the legendary Moonlight Sculptor, which was a lit RPG series, very popular lit RPG Korean work. And so that's why it's called Royal Road, because that's the game.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so it started out that way, but then for somehow I was not around when it transitioned to a place where people could just post their own work on it. And I came across it in 27, 20, late 2016, probably early
Oh, wow.
2017,
Okay.
when I was reading I was looking for other lit RPG work. Actually, I went through lit RPG from anime, Sword Art Online, Danmachi, Konosuba, all of those, and then I read a whole bunch of light novels. And then I somehow or another went, there's got to be something else. And I came across Royal Road somehow.
Wow.
It must have been a Google search. I just don't know what the Google search is anymore. And I found the game, Viridian Gate Online, Luke Chelimenko's Ascend Online. These were all books that were posted there already.
Oh,
And I
interesting.
started reading them and I was like, oh my God, this stuff is really cool. They're doing some amazing, like they're those all of those writers are amazing writers. And so I started posting my own because why not? It was very much a fan website, right? You could just write your own stuff, post it for free. And there were enough readers, even back then when I started doing it, that you'd get comments and people commenting about it and being happy about your work and saying, thanks for your chapter and whatnot. Nowadays, it's huge. Like, as you said, there's so many writers. It's become a proving ground almost, especially for the RPG and progression fantasy works, which is what I write generally speaking. It's a place for people to get fans really fast, and to be able to test whether or not your writing is good, among, and your ability to market it and to get comments about your chapters. A lot of these readers are almost like alpha readers for your work, right? Because they will point out, mistakes that you've made, or do you just sometimes just read along? And it's become an entire economy where, because you can follow people on Patreon, there's people who are making gob loads of money posting their work on Royal Road and just, having Patreon have multiple chapters ahead.
That's so interesting. I don't want to mention the author's name, but I have a friend who was saying that that's what they're possibly trying to do with their novella. They asked me like, "Oh, is that what you're gonna do?" I was like, "Well, I have urban fantasy." I said, "It's kind of like I already have things kind of done, right? Like, in terms of a lot of feedback with great feedback." And I said, "But in terms of like I have other fantasy stuff, like dark fantasy stuff. I call them funnesies because it's like a D&D crew, right? I love the board game aspect, if that makes sense. Like, and I love just the crew, and all those interactions and the adventures and stuff." I said, "Well, I have a lot of that stuff, that I'm starting to go down the pipeline next year." So I said, "I would love to, I think just to go and see, what people think." And I don't have the same crew that is going to be available, for longer novels for fantasy. I just have these short urban fantasy novellas that they're helping me with, like three of them. So I think that's actually the route he's going, he said. So I think I might try it too, just for a few things. I don't know. Anytime there's people and there's writing and there's cool stuff happening, I'm like, have, FOMO. I just want to go and see how it works and like what's going on and stuff. So that sounds amazing though. So that's really, really cool. I know that's how it started though. So that's just like really, really interesting. 'Cause I always wondered like, why is it called Royal Road? And there was a couple things where That like that's kind of like a particular term, for quite a few games and genres, like over the years that have been pretty big. So I figured it had to be one of them, but I think that's really cool to know that. So that's really, really interesting. But in terms of genre or genres, since you mentioned it, why did you choose your current genres, in terms of lit RPG and like level progression? I'm just curious at like kind of what drew you into these genres.
Oh God. I think lit RPG is an interesting I love the fact I love the systems, right? I love the hard crunch, not only the hard crunchiness, but also how the systems work, right? It's making up your own magic system, but within certain specific rule sets. And just as importantly for me, when I'm looking at a lit RPG system or lit RPG world, is how it's affecting everything else outside of it, not just the character building and how he can min-max and optimize himself, but the social aspects of it, right? The System Apocalypse I have, which is one of my first series that I wrote, it's an apocalyptic work where an apocalypse comes and everyone gets character screens. And among all of these video game ass abilities is the healing factor, right? So you within 10 minutes you can go from being almost dead, like everything's broken, shattered, and whatnot, to perfectly normal. So, what does that do to a society? What does that do to people? There's an alien race, which I call the Yerek, who have their children running around playing a game during one of the scenes where they have this level one monster running around, bashing into the children, and they're playing a game of dodge. Tag with a monster, a living monster that's bashing them around, and the humans are freaking out. You're literally having children break bones and get up and get going, and the Yerrick are going, yeah, well, they heal in 10 minutes, it's fine. Someone's watching. They've got a healing spell. You're in a monster planet. You have to go and train them to go and deal with this. And so it's all of those things that really interest me, right? How do different societies, how do different people react to these weird ass game systems sometimes? And what does it change? And it's, I think, because some of these magic systems are completely bonkers, like the healing factor of 10 minutes, it's like, what the heck? Or going, like one of the most video game-esque XP methods is, you play a video game and you level up and suddenly you're healed again. How do you deal with that, right? You have people, characters who are running around just close to their levels and just so that they can, game that system so that they can, either level up or fight a monster that they cannot fight before. Because once they hit a certain level, they can't fight that monster or get as much benefits from it and whatnot. So you see all of these things, and it's really artificial, but how people react, that's not artificial, right? And so that's what interests me really when I'm writing lit RPG. I'm looking at how characters handle a weird ass system. And you can make the weird ass system help you explain certain ideas or certain, cultural or societal things. It's same with A Thousand Li, which is the image you see at the back. It's a path to immortality, right? Everyone can become immortal. What does that mean? How does society handle that? That if everyone could be an immortal, why isn't everyone pushing for it? Right? What's the cost on that? Why would certain people stop at certain levels, right? And if you've got someone who's close to being an immortal, what does that mean for society, right? He's so strong. What's the checks and balances or something like that, right? Our own life check and balances involve, legal laws and everything, but a lot of that is we can enforce them because, we are all very squishy.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Not so much when the guys are half immortal. It's a lot harder to enforce something like that. What does that mean, right? Those are the questions that really interest me. And when I'm playing around with things like progression fantasy and LRPG, those are the ones that I handle. And it's fun to write, and there's a lot of that power curve kind of, weak to strong aspects that are a lot of fun to write. And I do write them. Like, I mean, System Apocalypse, A Thousand Lady, all the same things. As I write more series in them, I'm also finding other things to play around with too.
Well, that's awesome. I do feel that though, because Diablo 2, that was one of my most vivid memories, was like
Oh,
run around and you're about to die. You're like, but I'm so close to XP. You're just like trying to hit anybody you can, right? To hit that level and then level up. 'Cause like stuff was expensive, right? Like those
oh
healing
God.
potions were expensive. So yeah, I totally felt that when you said that. I was like, oh, I definitely remember that. I do have to say though, in terms of like a thousand Lee, I think that's why when I was reading the blurb, I was reading the reviews, I was talking to friends of mine that have read the books and stuff. Like I just think that's why it interests me, because of what you're saying is like I loved like the Jet Li and Jackie Chan movie they were in together, the Forbidden Kingdom, right?
Right.
The society and just like Jackie Chan's character with being like an immortal scholar or so-called, right? I always thought like that would be so interesting, right? To be able to, and like just with how they approached like level progression, I think in the movie, I think did a great job personally. Like, like the rules and systems weren't there, right? Like you didn't see them, but if
Oh,
you
yeah.
did, it'd be perfect lit RPG, I think. But it really did like put questions in my mind, right? And I think that's why I liked Will White so much, with that level progression, is it I wanted to feel something similar to that world. In terms of just their characters, their abilities, because I do think I was always thinking about that. I was like, what if somebody could do this? Like, how do you stop them? They are both really powerful, and then the villains too were quite powerful with the Jade Emperor and stuff. And yeah, I just but that's when I was reading the blurb for book one. I was like, this is totally gonna be my thing. And my friend's like, how do you know? I was like, I just know. I was like, I know what I like, I know why I like it. And I said, this is going to be something that, I really enjoy. And it just had, to me, just had like a similar vibe of, some of those questions, with a system, similar to that. And yeah, so it totally reminded me of that. But it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just thinking about these overpowered people and how, do you deal with them? And that's like in Jeffrey Haskell's like Full Metal Superhero with like his Arsenal series. And that's like a big thematic question that I like that he explores. So I love that that's what you're talking about, in terms of your world and, and the systems and the writing, because those are the kind of, I love cool spells, I love cool moves and stuff, but those overarching, questions and uniqueness and, things that you can bring out with a society, because I do wonder, right, like what that does to you psychologically, right? If you are able to if you know you're like close to that XP, right? I have to think at some point somebody's writing a, two guys and one of them's a friend and they got to be guys, of course, I think. And one of them just goes off and thinks he's going to get the next level, right? But doesn't. I just think there's so many scenarios like that that, you can explore that you can't, in terms of, maybe some other, worlds or things like that, because you don't have, the genre or the system necessarily. So I think that's really, really cool. And in terms of, so I'm glad you already started talking about this, is rolls right into my next question, and I can't wait to hear this answer. So what are your Thousand Lee books about, and how did you come up with this idea?
Okay, so the Thousand Lee books are based are Xianxia works, so immortal heroes. And technically, it's the progression of my farmer main character getting a chance to become an immortal. And so it's basically his journey to become an immortal and reach that peak of the world, basically, before he ascends and disappears, which is the end of the series. It's 12 books long. It's 11 out now. There'll be 12 by the middle of next year. And it's a cultivation book. It's something that it's a series like China has been writing all of these Chinese cultivation web novel works. A lot of it has been web novel works that has come out within the last probably 15, 20 years,
Okay.
gotten really popular. You see some aspects of it in popular TV shows like Untamed, like that.
Oh,
Those are
yeah.
anime. Once Upon a Time in Linjiang Mountain is actually closer to what I'm writing, or what
Oh,
Taoism is,
okay.
which is a full Xianxia word. You know, they all have, you know, progressions through the various trees and as they grow powerful and so on and so forth, including the sect itself and everything. Whereas Untamed has a couple of sects, but everyone's superpowered already, and there's no talk about becoming immortals or the full immortality kind of thing. But I've been reading all of these works, and most of the Xianxia works that was coming out that I was reading, like Mortal Immortal, oh God. Now, I Shall Seal the Heavens, and a bunch of these others were very, they followed the progression fantasy power arc very well, right? You know, you start out low, you become what's the term? You get become powerful, and then you go back and face slap people and beat them up,
Oh,
and then you want because and then you
yeah.
move on to the next section and you do that again and again. And a lot of fun. I enjoy reading them. Obviously, I like God, I read like 50 plus of those novels before I kind of burnt out. But one thing that I was kind of missing was I used to watch a lot of Chinese movies, Hong Kong Chinese movies in the 1990s. I read stuff by Jin Yong, Return of the Conan Hero, all of those stuff, the old school wuxia works. And there were a lot of thematic elements in there about honor and family, loyalty between state and, sect and family, and how you dealt with all of those things. You know, the difference between right and, loyalty, really, quite often, and how you balance all of these things out, along with concepts about Buddhism and Taoism, that these characters and all these old school wuxia works always kind of had to weigh. That's not, long discussions about it, but it was always a feature of it, and I didn't see as much of that as I wanted to see in these other works that I was reading. And it annoyed me. You know, I'm a spite writer. I write because I want to explore something that I don't see happening. And with A Thousand Li, I didn't see this happening. I didn't see this discussion about, Taoism very much, which is a very huge part of the Thousand Li progression system.
Oh, cool.
And I didn't see a lot about this, looking at, the divided loyalties that you kind of get and everything like that. And I wanted to write. So to me, I wanted to write that. And that's where A Thousand Li comes along. It's like, okay, how would I change this to add all of these aspects? And how would this affect the world and why?
Well, that's so cool. It's so funny because you mentioned a lot of people and things there that I have not heard in a while that I'm like, oh my God, like it took me right back to college. Like I had been able to I'm so happy that I don't like the bill that comes every month, right, for my college education. But in terms of, being able to be around people, Bleach was a big one for me, that I just went down a rabbit hole. I mean,
Oh
like
yeah.
you name it. Like I hadn't really been into anime or anything like that, in those veins. Like I was originally going to school to be like an illustrator, and then I switched to becoming a teacher because history just fascinated me more. And like I got to take like historical studies. So they're like, well, you can teach, but you can also like be a historian or, curate and things like that. If you want to add these classes and things, and that the artifacts and just, societies and different people, just it just kind of called to me more. But in terms of, just being exposed to other people, and I was so blessed. I went to Michigan State, and Their international population at the time was like 38% of the university. And that was about 18%, almost 20% more than the average. This was like 15, 17 years ago when I graduated. But that was above the average. And like I had friends from all over the world that were like, you gotta check this out. You have to check this out. Like, and it was just so cool. And everything you just mentioned was in a flurry for like 6 years for me, that I was just accumulating so many different genres, subgenres, directors. I mean, like you name it, writers, artists. I mean, so I'm gonna have to go back to some of those now because it's a special, they have a
Some of
special
them
place in my
really hold
heart.
up, like the Swordsman series, both the first and second ones are just still amazing works, really well done. A lot of 1990s Hong Kong films hold up quite well, surprisingly. The more modern stuff, some of it is really good, some of it is, I almost feel like they've used too much CGI.
Oh, yeah. That's how I feel with a lot of cinema now in terms of movie. I'm actually glad a lot of shows and stuff, like Netflix or Showtime. I'm glad more and more are kind of going back to more of those, like real effects, those kind of things. That's where I come from, the old school Star Wars and stuff. I love those 80s and, those 70s and 80s, just like those real effects, and just the little things that they did versus the computers. So I think that's where maybe it comes from for me, where I'm like, oh, if you can do something where it's a little different without the CGI, and a little bit more real, even if it doesn't look perfect, at least it's not, fake CGI stuff thrown in your face all the time. There's a couple movies I saw from I think it was like mid to like 2010s and stuff. And everyone goes, check this out. I'm like, no, I'm good. And I just couldn't get through them because of the bad CGI. And I actually went back to a lot of 90s stuff and 80s. I was like, ah, this is my sweet spot. So I definitely understand that. But I do want to just talk to our audience, real quick, anything, that he's mentioned, like you got to go check out because these are people that I can't even tell you like how many influences they've had, on myself, like you said, so many other people I've talked to, so I think it's good to, this is why I do interviews. It's like you mentioned a couple people, I'm like, God, I haven't checked that out in a long time. Hey, Tatiana Obey, and we talked about where she got Sister Samurai ideas from, and it was so cool with like Afro Samurai, and I was like, oh, I
Oh
forgot
God,
about
such a
that,
great series.
right? Yeah, and I'm like, it's back on my list again, to go back over. I love that Lone Wolf and Cub. I just that lone samurai, like Samurai Jack, whether it's the original or the newer one, like those are just some things that to me just like they got me so interested, right, in just a different type of fantasy, rather than medieval. And I think that's why I write the way that I write, even if I'm in one of those types of worlds, I like to kind of go all over because these people provided us with a very different perspective, right? And saying that it doesn't have to just be in Western Europe to be fantasy. So I was so glad that that they were there to, and I'm like, that's more my kind of thing. So like what A Thousand Li for me, I'm like, ooh, that's like so up my alley based off of some of these influences that you've said. It sounds awesome. So,
Thank you.
and then in terms of, so I gotta mention this because I can't even talk about this yet. Maybe I should have flipped it, but you could tell I really want to read your Thousand Li series.
Yeah, no, I
That's
get
high on my
it.
list. But what are your books in the System Apocalypse series about, and where did this concept come from?
Oh, well, System Apocalypse is basically, I mentioned it's an apocalypse that's brought about by everyone getting a system in there. And then we get monsters populating all across the world, including some full-out kaiju that run
Awesome.
around and destroy entire cities, along with aliens who are basically, they're basically aliens from our myths. That we sort of have an idea of, but sometimes I'm completely mistaken about it. Who also have been living in this system, who come and invade Earth. So you kind of have this kind of first contact alien invasion thing, along with monsters. I basically took the entire kitchen sink and threw at it. There's
Awesome.
literally NECA in it, kind of thing. But I wrote this because I was reading a couple of other apocalyptic lit RPG stuff on Royal Road. And so I think the first one was Change New World, then Scotty Futcher's He had Earth Tactics Advance, I believe, which was a turn-based lit RPG in an apocalypse, which was very strange. He
Interesting.
did it really well, but very strange. And then Randomly Ghosthound was writing his at the same time.
Oh.
And so I was reading all of these, and I lived in the Yukon at that time. And so I was all of these were kind of set up in big cities, or started off in big cities. And I was living in the Yukon, which had in Whitehorse, which had a population of about 28,000 people. And again, spite writer, one of the things that annoyed me about most apocalyptic books that I'd read before and I was reading then, was that this concept of if things go bad, people become terrible, right? That's zombies and whatnot, everyone becomes a terrible person. That's not always true. Like, actually, if you look at a lot of real world disasters, people pull together.
That's
That's
true, yeah.
more it's more likely that people will pull together than they will, turn on one another. Now, there are obvious exceptions. Katrina, New York also had one problems. But if you look at the majority, people pull together. We have this narrative that everything goes to hell. Not always. And
Yeah.
then and I looked at Whitehorse, which is a small community. Everyone knows everyone. Everyone's, well, not to the thing, somewhat. It's a small town. And I went, there's no way this is going to happen. Like, it's one thing to shoot, someone that you don't know. It's another thing to want to go and shoot, the guy who was your school teacher when you were like 10. It's a different thing. And we're in Canada, so completely different thing. Guns aren't as common, sort of. Like, we have rifles, but it's not the same aspect. All of that meant that I was like, I want to write an apocalypse, which is a little nicer in the sense that people do work together in the apocalypse because they are in a small world, they are in a small society. But how does that work, right? How do you function in this game-like system where, there are a lot of tragedy, a lot of people are dying, the main character, John, he starts out with having a really bad day. He's basically found out his girlfriend's was cheating on him, and so he goes out camping in Kathleen Lake, which is beautiful, beautiful location. I used to go camping there all the time with my
Oh,
family,
cool.
in the middle of nowhere, right? It is 5 hours or so drive from Whitehorse itself. Like, Kathleen Lake is about 30, 40 minutes from the closest settlement, which is Hayes Junction, which has a population of a few hundred people, kind of thing. So he's in the middle of nowhere when the world ends, and
Oh,
his
wow.
car gets trashed along the way. So he has to actually make his way back to Whitehorse in the middle of an apocalypse with monsters coming along and appearing everywhere. And so that was the start of it. And along the way, basically, the series goes from exploring the apocalypse in Whitehorse to exploring the apocalypse across the world to seeing the why. Yeah, it basically answers the question of why all of this is happening.
Well, that's really cool. Well, that sounds awesome. Sounds like he's gonna have a really bad day, after that.
Yeah, John's an interesting. I really like John. There's a lot of me in him. It was one of my first series that I wrote, and there's a lot of me in him.
Oh, cool.
But he's kind of broken. He's very, very broken. It works for the story, but he is not a person.
That's awesome. Well, those are always my favorite kind of characters, personally, because I look at like a different type of broken, I think, right? But still pretty broken. Was like like the main character, whatever his name was, from Wanted, where he's like in the the dead end job and all those kind of things. And
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know, when Lit RPG came to my attention, at least, years after that movie, I was like, that'd be it. I was like, this is like a Lit RPG movie to me, like in terms of the progression and stuff. And now when I
Oh.
go back and watch it, it literally, like, after I read, I'm almost done with book one, like Primal Hunter, and I'm about 60% of the way through it. But it was so funny with like how it started and stuff. I was like, I felt like I was like kind of in the beginning of Wanted, so it was really cool. And then when I went back and watched the movie again, it was just like on one night last year when my son and I, up in the middle of the night and stuff, feeding or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, this is so a level progression,
It is
it was
actually.
really, really cool. It was
Yeah,
awesome.
have you read the comic that is based on?
Oh, you know what? Years and years ago, because when the movie first came out, that was like, well, that was like still when I was like, oh, maybe I'll do a little drawing on the side and stuff, and I just got slammed, with college courses and trying to pay for school and stuff. But that actually was, I have to pull it back out again. That was actually a gift, from one of my roommates, because he absolutely loved the comics and loved the movie, and like that was totally like his type of world. He was into like Hitman, and like
Oh
all
yeah.
those, all that, like Max Payne, like all those were definitely like his jam. And that was like right up his alley. But yeah, it was really, really good. But that also, like, talk about graphic novels. Like, for me, like a lot of people, they're like, oh, like, why do you like games so much? Why do you like this? And like, you just have a little bit different taste than maybe some people. I said, well, I originally loved sci-fi in particular, like a myriad. But in terms of comics, like graphic novels, like I was reading comics from a really, really young age. Star Wars I started, and then I just kind of went out from there. And I just think people, when they limit themselves, to one type of media, you're limiting yourself as a writer, I think, and as a media consumer. And for me, it was like there were so many graphic novels. I was just thinking last night when I think today, yeah, t last night there was like a teaser to the teaser trailer for Superman, like
Oh,
James
yeah.
Gunn's new one. But I was just thinking to myself, like, I love going on a TikTok, and when they have those little panels, where they just kind of take snapshots of Batman, Superman, Spider-Man in particular,
Yep.
they'll do a music or whatever. I'm like, it just brings back so many great memories of, me reading some of these. And that wanted that, that was a great series. I think, a lot of people forget The Walking Dead too, wasn't a TV show at first, and there's so many, great graphic novels, that birth like amazing, media for us to consume, on the big screen. So I think I really hope we keep going back to, with
I'm
the
sure
Netflix
we
and stuff.
will. I mean, the nice thing about comics is that they basically created a storyboard for you, right? Like Frank Miller's The 300 basically was a giant storyboard for Zack Snyder. You literally can take, sections of it, and all the Sin City ones were basically storyboards for it. And yeah, Lucifer actually came out, though Lucifer went completely in a different
Oh,
direction.
I forgot about that.
I
That's really
really
funny.
enjoyed Lucifer. Sandman's come out. The one that I'm really curious if they'll ever do is, did you ever read the top 10 graphic novels?
I don't think so.
So I think they're called top 10. They're basically set in this world, full of superheroes and gods and everything, and it's all in this city, really, giant metropolis city. And so you've got superhero police detectives running around dealing
Oh,
with,
that's cool.
it's really well done. It doesn't have a lot of, I think it's like five or six graphic novels, but it's really well done. They have these little mysteries, and you've got, all of these detective pairings that have to deal with all of these weird ass superhero mysteries, really.
Oh, that's
All of these
cool.
cases, because everyone's got weird powers. And so I remember one where a bunch of, I think it was Norse gods, I'm not might who were killed. So they walk into this bar, and all of these Norse gods are dead, and they're like, what the hell is going on here?
That's amazing. I wrote that down. I'm gonna have to check that out. This sounds very similar to, it's funny they mentioned that, because it sounds similar to an idea I've had for years, where So I was looking, and one of my friends shared, I'm totally blanking on the author, but Pyromancer. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. But what people liked about it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I have a similar character who's like a kind of like that character mixed with like Harry Dresden, but it's like level progression is what I want to do. So he finds himself, he's like, like a beat cop essentially in like a fantasy city, and
Right.
he has some fire elementalist powers. So he's basically like he works with like their version of the fire department, with like arson cases and stuff. And then he kind of goes from there and like solves mysteries and stuff. So, but that's like totally my kind of thing. My friend goes, oh, that's really niche. And then like for years now, like indie fantasy or just indie in general has become big. And I was teasing recently. I said, I think pretty soon it's my time to shine with this just weird, story. I said, I think if you do it right, like with the character, and have it be interesting enough. But I said, well, maybe it would have to be, where he expands, right? Like maybe he, does other like cases and stuff, not just fire. But I said, I think like that ha being like the first one, and showing how, like, because I was thinking, like, in a society where you had magic, right? Like, how do police and or how would someone who's trying to, detect arson or something, like, how would you do that? Like, and I just have to solve that question, I guess, is kind of the thing. And so that's funny, because that's like totally up my alley. My friend would be like, that's your kind of thing, Dan. So I wrote that down. I have to check that out. Can't believe none of you out there have told me about this. I have over almost 200 episodes. No one's commented or suggested that to me. You guys do better, audience, do better. Okay. But that sounds absolutely amazing. But you do have a lot of different books out. I'm curious at which ones are some of your favorites and why?
I mean, obviously, Civil Apocalypse and A Thousand Lee are our favorites for different reasons. I really enjoy A Thousand Lee. I enjoy writing in that world because it brings me back to my roots, you know. But I think the two that I most recently have been writing that I've really enjoyed, well, Leveled Up Love. So Leveled Up Love, I didn't recently write, but it was probably my favorite to write that I will never get a sequel. It's a standalone romantic gamelet, romantic lit RPG
Oh,
work.
cool.
So it's a romance. The guy basically has a blocked relationship app that forces him to go out and deal with people. And so it's a rom-com. It's
Oh,
basically
that's
a
awesome.
rom-com with the RPG elements in it. And I worked on it with Angela Marshall, who's an actual romance writer. And because I wasn't 100% confident, I also have a tendency to write too serious. So she helped me, work on keeping it lighter and funny and silly. As completely one of my favorite books to work on. Fortunately, it doesn't have a lot of readers, but it's still probably one of my favorites. That's just it's hilarious. We were laughing while working on it. The other one that I really enjoyed writing and I'm still writing within is my Hidden Dishes universe, specifically the Nameless Restaurant is basically a cozy cooking fantasy. At the end, there's not a lot of plot. The entire thing is about a restaurant. One night, every novella is one night in the restaurant. It features food.
That's cool.
That's all it is. It's my job to write about food. And if you read any of my work, you'll realize that food is very important to me. And with the Hidden Dishes series, I basically write a whole bunch about food, and then I get to test out all the recipes. So I had all the food that is actually recipes that I've made. And in the first book, I actually have a link to all the recipes that so that you can actually download the recipes and make them yourself, kind of thing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool. Well, those both sound awesome. So, but I think it just goes to show you, right? Like, write what you want to write, in particular, and then, but that's really, really cool. I didn't realize that with the romance. Somebody had suggested to me, like, oh, you're gonna love this book, and they're like, it's your type of humor. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, I'll read anything if it's, if it's my type of book. And I feel like I've had really good people like suggesting stuff to me, so that's so funny. So I definitely look forward to both those. And I'm a huge foodie, so I go to the gym a lot because I have to, because I refuse to, I stopped eating some things and drinking some things like soda and stuff, just so I could enjoy things. Like we travel a lot, and we just went to Philly and just had like brilliant, brilliant food there. So that's just one thing I just don't want to give up is food. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I never have, and I don't do a lot of, like sweets and stuff. But every once in a while, we went and had these like just like amazing chocolates from somewhere downtown that they were just kind of passing them out. Actually, we went to PAX, which was really fun, 2 Sundays or whatever. And yeah, there were people like handing out samples, and I was like, I'm not a big candy person, but they were absolutely amazing. So I was
Oh,
glad I tried it. So,
little jealous.
yeah, oh man,
Yeah,
it was really cool.
I do cut out soda too, just for the same reason. I eat too much. I like my
Yeah.
sweets too much, so I don't cut out sweets. So I have to cut out some sugar somewhere. The thing is, I don't drink, so I don't have to worry about the beer calories.
I saw some friends recently from like years ago, and they're like, "What have you been doing?" I was like, "Well, I was like, I usually like before my son, like I was back at karate. I had some like oral surgery stuff, and the dentist was like, you got to just like take a break if you do something, you're gonna mess up your entire jawline." So I can't wait to get back to that. But I was like, oh, I just went back to the gym, and we had a new gym open, and it was nice because it's hard here with my son with my heavy bag and stuff. But they put up, I went to like going like a Crunch now, and it's like one of the largest ones in New York State, and they have a bunch of heavy bags set up. I'm like, oh yes, I can actually like do what I want to do, warm up, and then go. So I've been going to the gym there more just because like they have like some mats and stuff too, and I can do some judo and jujitsu, just like solo drills and stuff, just to just to move. And I was like, I just feel better. But my friend was like, you've lost like 3 pounds, like half to at your waist. I'm like, yeah. I was like, no, I just gotta lose it on the belly, man. But that one usually slides off once you get into the uniform and get back kicking and stuff. So I can't wait. Hopefully like next month. But yeah, I was like, I can't do the soda because we went to a couple places recently, and I just could not. We have a couple new restaurants opened up near me, and they're like just brilliant. We had like a barbecue one, we had a new Italian one. And so when you're writing about food, I'm like, I love it. Because anytime, like Brandon Sanderson, I think, does a good job writing about food too. I wanted to try the smoothies at Warbreaker so badly because I'm a smoothie guy, and he made them sound so delicious. So I definitely am checking out when everybody's writing about food and how you guys are writing about food. So that's one of my favorites for someone to mention. So cozy fantasy with food in a restaurant is definitely my kind of thing. So definitely gonna check that out. But that also leads us right into kind of talking about a little bit more about world building. So when it comes to world building, what sorts of things do you like to focus on the most?
Food. World building, food does come into mind, because I'm a bit of a geek, and I've done a lot of business and society, I guess, and how
Oh,
that
cool.
money really, how that actually works, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily, like, I don't go into the long tracks about the economy or anything, but I kind of have an idea of what the currency is and what's important, I guess, what people are buying, right? Or what they
Very
value.
interesting.
Because, like, a thousand lei is an example. People, a lot initially, it matters a little bit about how much coins and cash and whatnot Wu Ying has, the hero. But it very fast becomes a non-matter because you're in a sect, you're in a model, you can provide for yourself, your basics really easily. Like, the sect really pays for most of that. You don't have to worry about, your living costs or whatnot. So then,
Oh, that's cool.
what's the cost? What are the things that people trade, right? And the things that people value is progression, right? Everyone wants to become immortal. So then it becomes spirit meats, spirit cores, spirit herbs, things that you can use to make alchemical pills or things that will help you progress to the next
Oh,
level.
cool.
And so that becomes the big question. And how does that, work out? And so I find that understanding what drives people on what is valuable also drives the story too, right? Because
Yeah.
We all need things. It's just what is it that a society or individuals value? So that's for me is one of the interesting things about world building that I like using, especially if I'm not creating the world from scratch, right? Sorry, if I'm creating a world from scratch. So history is another different is another aspect that I borrow heavily from. Like when I like reading about history. I read a bunch of historical stuff for fun. And so I always have, if especially if you're on TikTok or Instagram or whatnot, it quickly finds the things that you're interested in. And my feed sometimes gets a bunch of these historians talking about random, historical facts. And I'm like, ooh. And so I like actually taking, aspects of that and seeing, what I can do to go and weave that into or the equivalent idea. Sometimes I take, whole historical incidents and just throw them in because most people don't have historical
Yeah,
background.
and it's
So
new.
So it's all new and I can make use of it. But most often it's just more inspiration. That I use to go in. But I find that if you can weave in aspects of old work or historical aspects of a culture or in your world, it gives a greater degree of authenticity to your world, which helps people, get embedded in it. So those are the things that I kind of look at. And obviously we've talked about how systems and the magic systems function. Those things are, especially because I write lit RPG and progression fantasy, those things are incredibly important. I don't like it. I don't like reading progression fantasy where the magic system is or the lit RPG is pasted on, like scripted out. It's just a fantasy book. Nothing wrong with that. But if it's But I don't like it if they're not really embedded in there and people aren't thinking and it doesn't affect the world. Because if that's the case, then I might as well just read the fantasy book.
It's like a cracked foundation, if that makes sense. And that's actually, unfortunately, I do have to be honest, like I've come back to the RPG because I felt like several years ago people were, it was my mistake. I should have started with some of the really good ones, but I like interesting things. So it was like people had interesting ideas, but I think that's what it was. So I actually feel better about this now, not thinking about it. But I think that's what it was that it really wasn't lit RPG. Like they just kind of did that, right, to say like it's in the genre. But it was like I was just reading fantasy, and I was like, I want lit RPG, if that makes sense. Like that's what I come to the, so I think that's always like something important, right, to discuss is like, are you really meeting those readers' expectations? And I just felt like I was reading some that weren't, and I kind of gave up for a while, and then I went and found some other ones, and I was like, okay, this is actually like lit RPG to me, and I enjoyed them a whole lot more. So stayed in the genre.
I think that if your magic system isn't affecting your world, right, then you've not built a proper magic system. Sanderson is a great example of having magic systems that really affect his world. Everything from all his Mistborn series, really, like the original as well as the Alloys of Law
Oh,
of
I love
War
those, yeah.
series. Oh, yeah, I know. I'm like, oh my God, you've got a Western kind of thing
I,
in.
that was my favorite. I loved Alloy of Law. I was like, how did it take me? Because I had the book for like 3 years, and I met him and I had him sign like Way of Kings and Alloy of Law, and I was like afraid of taking it off the shelf. And then one day I found a dollar copy for hardcover, so I bought it. And I remember it was like 4 Fourth of July's ago, like right after the pandemic. And I flew through it all in like maybe like 26 hours. Like I got no sleep that weekend, guys. It was awesome.
Yeah, no, but I mean that when this magic system is properly embedded, it makes a big difference to the world building. When it doesn't, and unfortunately, you're right, a few years ago, like 3, 4 years ago, a lot of people saw that lit RPG as a genre was making a lot of money. And it still is. Like we are still making a lot of money, especially for sci-fi fantasy. But a lot of these people came in thinking they could write lit RPG, or they could take, literally, in some cases, they take took their old books, pasted on some random little beach words on it, and then republished it. And those most of those didn't do well because they weren't, as you said, lit RPGs. Nowadays, we get a lot because the pool of lit RPG authors has grown so big, and actual lit RPG authors, if you look at Royal Road, there's like hundreds probably of authors coming out who are writing real lit RPGs. Those type of books have just kind of fallen by the wayside. I don't see them very much anymore. And
I would agree.
admittedly, I mean, there's so many books out there. I can't keep up. I literally cannot keep up. Like, I just got my Goodreads document saying how many books I've read. It was like 60 books I've read this year, which is
Oh,
great.
nice. It's awesome.
It's like, I think there's like 60 new books coming out every week now.
Something.
I can't keep up with the genre, and which is such a it's such a nice change from, you know, when I launched in 2017, where like you might get maybe four or five books a month. So it's a big change.
I agree with you. I just had a private conversation with a couple like lit RPG authors about this, and like that was one thing that they had been frustrated with previously, so they had kind of went and done some other things, and then but they came back to the genre, and are here to stay now, because they felt that the sharks or whatever you want to call them, people were that were just not really here for a passionate reason, I guess. We're all here to make some money off of it if we can, whatever. But like, I don't really care at the end of the day. I just want to keep writing, if that makes sense. So I think that's a different mindset, right? With what people were doing. But I think that it was a shame because for me, like I was still, in the community and I had lit RPG friends that I was reading, but I wasn't going into, Kindle to find, particular books. I was just, getting recommended them to me. But I think that like severely hurt for a while. But I'm so glad to see that, like you said, it's back on the upswing. But I think a lot of those people weren't making money, luckily, right? And for the genre's sake of evolution, and they decided, ooh, this, I'm gonna go do something else, or I'm gonna go back to fantasy or this or that, which I think, it helps them find their, particular audience. And I think it has helped the overall, genre, just in general, because people, that aren't me, right, that don't know, people, that write the books, it was so hard to go and actually like, find good, like you said, right? You get some that were just like, ooh, but I have so many now that I'm like, it's so hard to like try and do a myriad of stuff, right? But I have like Homebrew was a great book I started at like that series, and there's just so many, lit RPGs. Like I have so many on my list right now. It's crazy, but it's nice to see them, and I don't know. I always was always cheering for the genre, so I always love seeing a new genre, subgenre do well, because I think it just helps everybody, and it's nice to see that, it's even itself out. But I think that's any time, right? Like Cozy Fantasy, I think, is going through that now. Like you had that, you're having that same those same growing pains, essentially right now, I think. And but I think it's gonna be where, lit RPG will be really soon. So I'm just curious, I know we're winding down on time here, but what is your strategy for creating characters that readers will care about and want to read?
I actually don't really have strategies with
Ooh,
character creation.
I like that answer.
I am what I call a planter, right? I know my beginnings, I know my ends for the most part, both for the book as well as generally speaking, I know what my end is for the series that I want to write. I generally don't have specific ideas of who characters or how to make characters lovable. You know, I just write. I generally end up with characters. I know what a character needs to come in for to make a scene, and then I do my best, not very well, but I do my best to try to keep bringing those characters in. And a lot of the times, I find that my characters, if I'm doing the job right, they will tell me who they are. And I don't really care in some ways if people like the characters. Because the characters are who they are, right? So I don't go out of the way to make them make my characters anything. They just come in, you know, they play their parts, and then a lot of, hopefully, if they do it right, they stick around, and they keep bugging me with more information. But I think the thing that I find useful when I on a craft basis to help is to try to give them distinctive voices. So certain characters like Dohei, in A Thousand Li, he's a monk. He has a little idiosyncratic thing, which I came up with because I wanted to bring in a monk character, but I had to figure out why he was a, you know, why this Buddhist monk was in a immortal set rather than, you know, being a monk. And in his case, he got kicked out because he loves meat. He loves
I get
eating meat.
that. Yeah.
He didn't want to give it up, and he kept on breaking the rules. And so they were like, you know
Yeah.
what? This is doesn't really work for you. Maybe we can try another time, you know, in your next life. In the meantime, go here. And they threw him into this set, basically. And so that's one of his things. But then he also has a very specific viewpoint, right? Because he is still very much a Buddhist monk. So he doesn't, you know, there's certain things he won't do. There's certain things he will refuse to do. He has a very moral, he's a moral compass that is much stricter than Wu Ying's. He also had, you know, there's certain words that, you know, he'll pray for people, you know, Amitabha and stuff like that, because that's his voice, right? That's the things that he talks about or whatever. And so I think that's the thing that I find on a craft basis helps people pick characters out, right? Posing is a different, is a nice one to use as well. Having people curse or not curse or creatively curse can make your characters different. Jim Butcher does that really well with Dreadnought Files, right? Hell's Bells, right?
With John, yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I think things like that are things that you can learn from other writers and bring that into your own writing. But the characters themselves, at least for me, they write themselves. Or they
I
tell me
like
what
that.
they want to do.
Sometimes with like your kids, right? You're like, can you guys just stop for 5 seconds? Let me like write this scene. I had a couple that told me they're like, we're not in this book. And I'm like, to hell, you're not in this book. And then it turned out, my friend, that they were not in that book. They're in a different book. Then these other two characters came like, we're in this book. I'm like, thank you so much. Sometimes I wish they would kind of just zip it, right? But my friend, I asked him, I go, which of these two pairs of characters do you think sounds better for this book? And of course, he sided with the new version, and he goes, it just sounds better. I'm like, okay, fine. I talked to my friends. They're like, well, at least they're letting you know ahead of time, right? Versus like, draft five or something like that. But I think that makes total sense, is what you're saying, and I think that's just a great, some great tips on craft right there. So that's awesome. But before we go, I just want to make sure, do you have any news updates or current projects, anything like that that you can share with us?
Oh God, lots of current projects that I can talk about. Like A Thousand Li, book 12 is coming out next month. Sorry, next year, middle of next year. That's the big and series finale, the third book of the third novella of the Hidden Dishes series, the Cozy Cooking Fantasy is coming out. I also have Climbing the Ranks, which is a climbing Malaysian climbing, tower climbing lit RPG.
I got that
That
one too on my list, so
It's a fun little series. I actually really enjoyed writing that one because I wrote it with in a lot of characters speak Manglish.
oh, that's
So
cool.
it's one of those where I'm like, I wish more people actually listened to it on audio because it has a very different voice. And you know,
Oh, cool.
it's I got we did a lot. Tantor did an amazing job at finding an actual native speaker. So he
Well, that's
gets
cool.
all of the Manglish correct, right?
That's
So it's
awesome.
all done really well. And then I've got a big semi-secret, well, no, it is completely secret announcement. Bunch of things that are happening on the back end that I cannot announce yet or But hopefully at the time by the time this thing launches, it'll be out in the world. If not, it will be out in the world very, very soon. And so if you want to find out what it is, follow me. It's a big announcement. It's actually cool,
Awesome.
really exciting.
That's awesome. Well, I look forward to that. I would love to have you back too, to talk about, book 12. I'm kind of not taking much of a break this year. I'm trying to get ahead. You know how it is. I got publication stuff myself, so I'm trying. I don't want to stop this. This has been such a, I've learned so much from you just today, and this is kind of like my journal, so to speak, to, check in with different people at different points, and it's just been such a great experience. And people ask me what I learned. Like Nicholas Fuller asked me, "What have you learned?" I'm like, "Oh my God!" I'm like, if I had a 1,000 years to write all the things I learned from, different authors and creatives like yourself, I wouldn't have enough time, So it's been absolutely great. But I look forward to chatting again, in particular, because I have a feeling that I'm gonna try and put book one for 1,000 Leave the First Step on my list. But I just have the feeling that might get to that book 12 pretty quick in 2025. Sometimes I'm a binger. I have to be honest. Luckily, the Dresden Files are pretty massive books, so I do it in segments. But I had to learn the hard way, because I went like book 1 through 7 within like I think like maybe 8 or 9 weeks. It was a lot of reading.
Oh.
I actually really look forward to for that series, and just to check that out. But just so everybody knows, in case you are new, and you're watching this podcast for the first time or listening to it on audio for the first time, you can find Taz links and everything right in the description. So please make sure you do that. Per always, please make sure if we have authors or creatives, whether they're on Amazon, Kindle, Kickstarter, all those fun things, please make sure you're following them. I follow everybody, and I actually get this cool thing on Kindle where it actually sends me updates on all the authors. So make sure you do that on Kickstarter as well. You guys will get those updates. Make sure we're reviewing all of our products, anywhere for our authors or other creatives on this channel, anywhere where they can be found. It helps everybody, including like, we mentioned like voice actors, cover artists, editors, all those people involved in the process. So doing that helps everybody, whether traditionally or indie published, on any media or platform. Tal, thank you so much for coming on today. This was absolutely awesome. I'm so glad that this worked out, this season in particular. I think, like I said, it's serendipitous. I have some ideas swirling around in my head, and now you just like blossom them. So my writing session is gonna be real good tonight, and I credit that to you, my friend. But I definitely look forward to, like I said, reading 1,000 Lee, System Apocalypse. I grabbed several of those, on top of, yours is Jason J. Willis. So I look forward to that. I got the audio for that one already. Head of the Class just sounds like my kind of thing. So I really look forward to that. But if there's anything I can do, in the meantime, before, this episode airs, or after, my friend, you just let me know. I have my podcast Facebook group. I'll send you the link and can always post anything in there that you want. You can just send stuff to me if you're like, I just don't have time. You can just email me or find me anywhere, and I will get the information out there for you, my friend. And yeah, we'll help you in any way we can. But other than that, I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to reading your books.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, Daniel.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, like I said, I hope to see you in the future. I'll, be sending you guys some emails so we can set that up way ahead of time. But other than that, my friend, happy writing, and I will see you later, okay? Hope you have
All
a good
right.
rest of the day.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.